Now, you know, your first experience in selling black radio was WNAC.
Yes, it was.
Right. Tell us about that experience.
That was a unique experience because at the time I was working, I had worked for 2 years. I had 2 years under my belt from Weeby and WACC. So I got a call out of the blue from Will Mevin, who was the sales manager then, local sales manager at WNHC. And he basically wanted me to come work for him. And I'm thinking, I don't know, I said, I'll listen to you, you know, I'll talk to you. It's always good to explore your options. But there was something inside of me that was saying, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't even bother because I am working for two number one stations. And they made it really clear. It was like, being there, they were like, you're special to be here and you should be happy to be here because a lot of people aren't because they trim the staff and so on and so forth. And you're working for two number one stations and this, that, and the other, that kind of thing. But I figured, you know what the heck, I'll listen to him. And Will's like the ultimate salesman.
Right.
And he just said, you know, Lejeune, I can't lie to you. He said, it's a 1,000-watt station. It's AM. It's known in New Haven, but not too much beyond that. He said, but you could do really well here. You could go far. You can make money. You can end up in management. You could basically have anything you want. And I liked that idea. I felt like even though I was doing well at Weeby, I still felt a little limited. In some ways. But talking to Will, I thought, if I can do what I need to do, and then I'm coming back to New Haven. I'm living in New Haven, so it's like, oh, I didn't have a commute on top of all this.
Okay.
And actually, the station was in North Haven at the time.
Right.
So it's still up the road. It's closer. I'm thinking, you know what? Let me try it. And everyone thought I was crazy at Weeby. They were like, you're kidding. You're not leaving this huge FM station for this little tiny AM station that nobody knows. And you know, for what reason or what have you. And I said, you know what? I believe in me and I believe in what I can sell. And I know I can sell it. And I know I can convince other people to sell it. And I'm going to do it. And that's exactly what happened.
Tell me about selling black radio.
It was interesting. It was a totally different sell.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Well, you could, with your comments, but part of that question in your answer.
Yes.
Is also, you go see a car dealership. The guy, the owner doesn't listen to black radio, but you're trying to convince him that he needs to, you know, advertise on your radio station, right?
Exactly.
Go.
Okay. It was tough. One of the things that happened a lot was we felt, and we, you know, we had to do all the back work, but basically it was almost like selling twice. First, you had to educate people on the fact that black people are viable consumers. So we had to supply things. We had to do our research. We had to have all the information in the world to convince them that black people are viable consumers and they're not going to come in there and they're not going to try to rob you. They're not going to bring your place down. They're not going to what have you. So then we had to sell them on the station, and this station doesn't have any numbers and we don't subscribe to any ratings books, so we can't talk numbers anyway.
Right.
So we really did have it cut out for us. But I think because we were young and we felt like we could do anything, And also believing, I mean, I knew. I was like, I know this, you know, the black community spends money and, you know, tap into it and you can reap the benefits. And I really believed in that. And I think if you believe in it and know that it's true and it is true, then you can sell it.
And the people get to feel
and
that.
And then people, let's face it, and more car dealers were probably easier because they understand green. So once you get them, get past the whatever.
So we buy Lexuses too.
Exactly. You know what I mean? That kind of thing, you know? But they understand green, and I think they were actually easier than some of the regular retailers.
Really?
You know, they have money, and then they understand green, and then you show them, and you bring them, you bring people like you out, and you have a remote, and they see, and they're like, oh my God, look at all these people, and they're buying my cars. So they were actually easier. And then you take photos of that and you start building a portfolio. And so we come out and we'd have our portfolio and we'd show pictures, and then their friends are doing it, and oh, so and so's doing it. And people, like, you know, imitation is the best form of flattery. I mean, we built on that, and then they started seeing us in the community, and it was a small group of people doing a lot of things. We did a lot for a little tiny little group of people. We did a lot in terms of just making it look like the station was so much bigger than it is. Because let's face it, perception is reality.
And you made history because it was the first station, actually in the state,
yes,
first commercial radio station that that played black music 24 hours a day, yes, 7 days
absolutely,
a week.
Absolutely.
I loved it. I mean, I had moved in. I moved from New York, and I had to wait. I had to wait for the weekend for me to hear some R&B.
I believe it.
And then, you know, all of a sudden, I'm hearing Lenny Green and Doc Winter and Doc Martin and Stevie D and. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, you know,
we definitely had it was a great, great team of people, and it was a great station to sell, and it was wonderful. And it was R&B, and it was the African-American, like middle class consumer.
And what's interesting is because, I mean, you know, you left home because you wanted to see the world and you ended up in New Haven.
I know, of all places,
you
know, right?
Yeah, yeah, you know, and it's a different world.
It is a different world. You know. Actually, it's funny that you said that because when I graduated from high school, I wanted to be in the D.C. area. Right. And my sister, Joandra, you met her.
Yes.
My sister was working as a stewardess in D.C. and I was going to go stay with her. I was like, can I come stay with you? I just need to be there because I know myself. And it's like, wherever I am, I know I can make it happen.
Right.
It's like, I'll stay with you. I'll sleep on the floor if I have to. I just want to be in that area because that's like my favorite part of the country. And she, I think got fired or something right before I graduated. And she said, don't come here because I'm leaving. I'm not going to be here. Right. And that's when I didn't have a plan B.
Okay.
So I kind of like thought, what the heck am I going to do? I mean, I'm back at home in Groton of all places, right, the last place I want to be. And I'm like, I don't want to work around here because there's nothing for me as far as I was concerned. I'm in media, you know. So, or at least I wanted to get into media. So my sister, Cassandra, at the time, her and her husband, they live in Ledyard now, but they were living in New Haven. She said, why don't you come stay here? We talked about it and you can come stay with us. And there's a lot going on in New Haven. And that's how I came to New Haven.
Right.
And then they left and I stayed and been loving it ever since.
Great. So after working in radio all that time, you decide television.
Yes.
Why and how's it going?
Oh, that's a good question. Why did I go into television? That's another whole nother conversation. That's a whole nother conversation. I think it was decided for me in some ways. Things were changing in radio, and it wasn't. There were some things that were going on that I didn't particularly care for.
Yes.
And I think I knew too much. It was almost dangerous because I knew too much. Mm-hmm. So it was almost decided for me. And my next move was, let me go into TV. Let me try something different.
Right.
Try another medium. I worked in print. I worked in radio. Let me try TV. That right. kind of thing. I didn't right. want to work in cable. I wanted to work in broadcast. So that's how I ended up at News 8.
Yeah.
So.
And what was
that
different?
That was 10 years ago, by the way.
What was different? And tell me.
It was totally different.
How did you adapt?
It was totally different. I thought it was going to be the same. I figured sales is sales. I've sold newspaper. I've sold radio. And I've sold radio for a long time. At that point, it had been 13 and a half years. I said, this has to be more or less the same. But, you know, TV. Now we have a screen. We have a voice and we have a screen. But it was so different. What was different was with radio, I felt like I had a lot more control in the sense that I could walk into a retailer's store or operation and literally have them on the air in like 3 days. Mm-hmm. In TV, it's not like that. It's a process and it's longer and there's a lot that goes with it. And just all of a sudden the pace came to a grinding halt. And I wasn't used to that. I was used to everything going really, really fast. And I love the quick pace. I had to get used to a slower pace and really plot it out, you know, because they're bigger orders. So they take time. They take longer. You know,
you got to produce a commercial.
You got to produce a commercial. And it's all the stuff that goes with that.
Right.
And there's less things in your control and more you relying on other people to do what they need to do.
I see.
Also cultivating those relationships so those things get done.
Right.
So totally different.
Right.
It took some time, but I adapted and I love TV now. I really do.
Relationships, very important in sales.
Oh, absolutely.
Talk about that.
With sales, you have to make relationships on the inside as well as the out. When they say that, is you're working with people in the station that you're working for, and you need these people to do things for you, whether it's answering your phone, whether it's putting in your orders, whether it's putting in your creative requests or what have you. So you have to be nice to these people and you have to treat them like you would like to be treated. So you have that. Then you have relationships that you're making on the outside where you're meeting with people. You're presenting yourself. When you present yourself, you're presenting the station. Advertising agencies. You have that. Those relationships, those are different. Those may be on the phone. They may not even be in person. So you have to be good on the phone. You have to be good with people because you're going out to retailers, local retailers, and you're presenting yourself. And you have to convince them that what you want them to buy is something they need and want. So it's a lot.
Plus, they got to like you, right?
And they have to like you.
That's real important, isn't
it? Yeah, it's very important. It's so funny. They say people do business with who they like, and that is so true. Think of your own self. Everyone's like this. If you don't like someone, you say, "I'm not buying anything from him or her." And it could be something you need, but you'll call another place just not to do business with that person. And that's how it is, especially today.
And I was talking to a young person about that because, you know, the young person was going through some changes. I was mentoring. And they said, well, you know, I don't care what people think about me, right? And I was like, hey, listen, you know.
You have to care.
Because in most cases, you might end up with that great job because somebody liked you.
Exactly.
You know.
I think it's more that today than anything.
Absolutely.
There's not a lot of jobs out there, so you really have to be liked.
Right.
Because I think that what happens sometimes with employers today is they may use the poor economy to get rid of people. They don't like.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, let's face it.
Right.
It all comes down to that. Relationships to me is so important in sales. I think it's one of the most critical parts of sales. I think that more than even with the way selling has gone because it's so technologically driven today, I still say it goes back to relationships. I still say writing that thank you card makes all the difference in the world sometimes because people aren't used to it anymore.
Right.
Everyone's used to technology and nobody having time to talk to you anymore
and Twittering
and texting and all that other stuff. But in reality, everybody still has the same basic needs. They want to be recognized.
Instead of FaceTime. Instead of Facebook, you know, you got FaceTime.
FaceTime, exactly. You know,
right.
It's funny.
You know, on a serious note, you know, we're both cancer survivors, colon cancer survivors.
Yes.
My audience knows about, my trek, being, unhealthy to being healthy, tell me about your experience.
I, 4 years ago, I'll say 4.5 years ago, I was getting pains in my stomach. And I knew something was wrong, but I've always had a weak stomach, so I didn't really think anything of it. And I went to see, I was talking about it with a coworker, and she had stomach issues as well. And she's like, oh, you should go see this place. And I'm like, no, I said, actually, I'm going to go see this other place. And I went to another place, and the doctor there said I was fine and nothing was wrong with me and go home, basically. And I went home and I just didn't feel good. And I was telling her, it's like, you know, I really don't feel good. And she's like, Lejeune, she said, you need to see this. You need to see the place, the G&I place I go to. So I went to her place and thank God I did because long story short, they had me come in and they consulted with me and the consultation lasted for 2 hours. At the other place, it lasted maybe 20 minutes. Mm. And I felt like they were really asking me about my, you know, background. And so as it turned out, my mother had polyps and my grandfather died of colon cancer. So there are things that they needed to know. The other place didn't even know because they only talked with me for 20 minutes. This place, 2 hours, they were like, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to get you a colonoscopy. And I'm like, colonoscopy? And I was 49 at the time.
Right.
Knew I had to get a colonoscopy. I mean, I'm
sooner
all the way.
Later.
I knew 50. I should have actually gotten it earlier. But at the time, I was thinking 50 because I really had heard horror stories about colonoscopies. And I was afraid to get it. So I figured I'll get it at 50 when you're supposed to get it. But in reality, I should have got it earlier. But at any rate, I went, I got the colonoscopy, and sure enough, they told me I had cancer, and I almost fell out of my seat when he said it, because to this day, I was so shocked. I would have never, ever guessed. I would just thought it was my stomach, and it hurt, you know? So when I was diagnosed, my sister's a registered nurse, my sister Cassandra, so she was incredible. She was so instrumental in with everything, helping me do what I needed to do to get through it. And my father, being retired, he had time. He lives in Old Saybrook, but he come down. I was living in New Haven at the time, and take me to the doctors, what have you. A lot of people in my corner, and that's important too.
Yeah,
that's going back to that relationships thing. It's almost like, and I've always been the kind of person where I've always looked to do things for other people, so it was real hard for me. So some people had said to me, they said, Lejeune, you're going to have to let us do for you.
Yeah.
I was so unused to that. I'm not,
right.
I'm to this day, I'm still this way.
Right.
But during that time, I had no choice. If I want to go somewhere, I get in the car. I mean, things that you're used to doing, suddenly you're not able to do anymore.
Right.
You know? And it was amazing. It was an amazing time. I'm actually going to write about it in my blog. I have a blog called The View from Lejeune.
Okay.
And my next blog is about my 4 years cancer-free.
right.
experience, and I'll probably have it written in a couple of weeks. But it's an amazing story.
So you had an operation, and then you know you ended up having to take chemo for a while.
Well, yeah, what happened was initially my surgeon told me that he was going to take a third of my colon out. He said, I'll take a third of it out. You'll have 2/3 of it left. We're going to do it laparoscopically, which means it's not surgical. It's going to be real simple and easy. He illustrated it for me. He drew a circle. He put 2 holes in it. He said, we're going to use these 2 holes. It's going to be no scars, no nothing. Real simple. You'll be in there for 4 hours because that's what we book you for. He said, but it's going to be, you're going to wake up and you're going to be a happy person.
Right.
What happened was that morning, my father and my sister were with me and they were in the room, that special room that they had people waiting in. And my sister tells me that, because of course I didn't know anything, I was under, but they have a light or whatever that goes out when something's wrong. And she told my father, she said, brace yourself. She says, something's wrong because the light went off. Right. So the doctor, the surgeon came in and said, sure enough, when they opened me up, they saw that the cancer had spread and they found a baseball ball size of cancer on top of my uterus. And also around my ovaries. So he had to call the OBGYN. Mm-hmm. And the OBGYN doesn't normally work on Fridays, and he just so happened to be there.
Wow.
He just so happened to walk in the door, and he was his friend. Another friendship thing.
Right.
You know, he's one of his buddies. And he said, can you do me this favor? I need you to, we got to get, this is bad. It's real bad. And I can't do what I need to do and sew her back up with all this other cancer still there that right. we didn't even know about. So he said, absolutely, let me get my scrubs on or whatever. He got his team of people. They came in, they did what they had to do. He spent the next few hours doing his thing. They wake me up. I don't know anything. You know, I'm just like groggy. And he tells me, you know, by the way, you don't have an ovary and you don't have, you know, a uterus anymore because of what happened. And I immediately like froze, like, wait a minute, you've got to be kidding. I've never had children, but at the same time, I was 49 years old. I wasn't going to have any kids, but just knowing that I couldn't was right. kind of a weird feeling.
Right.
So I just quickly turned my thought process around and just said, you know what? I'm going to look at the bright side, and I'm just going to say this is a good thing because I got 2 surgeries in the same time as I would have gotten 1. And I still would have had to get 2, but had 2 separate surgeries,
yeah.
which means that wait time would have been, everything would have been doubled.
Yes.
So I said, this is a good thing. And once I felt like that, I was fine.
And then a year of
I had six months of chemo. Yeah. Right, what happened right. was I was home for 5.5 weeks and then I went back to work and it was September. In fact, it was my mother's birthday, I think, when I went back to work, my late mother's birthday. And they said, your chemo's starting. It's going to be twice a month and it's every other week. And they gave me chemo to go. It's so different now. I mean, you literally go into the hospital and they hook me up to the machine and then they gave me the chemo. And then the remainder of it, they put in a little, looks like a little 8-track case, mm-hmm. really. And I carried that for 2 days and it's feeding itself intravenously through me because
wow.
I had a portacat. That was another surgery. I had a portacat installed on my chest. So that's how the chemo went in mm-hmm. for 2 days. This is what's different today.
Right.
And once those 2 days were over, I would go back and start beeping. I'd rush back to the hospital. They'd take it off, and then it would be slowly going through me. And I'd be sick. I felt sick. I was still going to work, but I didn't feel good because this right. chemo is still traveling through me slowly. Then it gets to the point where it's fine, and then you're okay for maybe 3 or 4 or 5 days, and then you're back at it again. And right. as each one that you get is cumulative, so each chemo treatment that you get, you feel worse and worse, and
right.
You're losing more and more weight. I was lucky in that the kind of chemo that you get for colon cancer doesn't take your hair off, so I didn't have that issue. Like mm-hmm. a lot of women there were breast cancer and they had the hair thing. I didn't have to worry about that, but I was losing weight rapidly and nothing tasted good.
Right.
And I wasn't sleeping good and I couldn't take showers when I had my portacat and my, you know, what have you. You know, I had to take baths and I'm not a bath person.
Right.
Now, this person that was used to being on the go and fast suddenly had to do everything slow, including taking baths, which is not my thing. And it was almost like I was meant to slow down. It's like,
yeah.
you're meant to slow down because everything that happened to me made me stop and be slow and do everything differently than I had ever done.
And there's some folks that turn it down, that they just think that it's just too hard. But you stuck with it because, yeah. you know, that was going to save your life, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I figured, you know what, I'm going through this, but in the end, I saw the light at the end of the tunnel and I said,
yes.
in the end, I'm going to be happy and I'm going to be healthy and I'll never take life for granted. Right. And that's how I feel. I don't take life for granted anymore.
And going to the doctor.
That too.
Going to the doctor.
That's so important.
And if that's one message that people can get today from this interview,
absolutely. It's
extremely important.
Colonoscopy.
Yes.
That's what saved my life. That colonoscopy that they told me I needed and the other doctor said I didn't. And second opinions, because the first doctor was wrong.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, some people will listen to what someone says, and even though they know, I knew my own body. My body didn't feel right.
Right.
So I knew. I was like, there's no way she could be right. Just because they're a doctor doesn't mean they're right. You got to get a second opinion.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, God bless you. And thank God that, you know, 4 years, you know.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Wonderful. It'll be four that's wonderful. Years absolutely. In August.
And listen, before you leave, last question. What's the best advice you ever gotten from who?
I'd say it goes back to my parents again. My father's still with us. He's 82, and he basically, like I said, he was raised in the military. So he raised us in a military fashion, and he felt that with hard work and determination and discipline and focus, you could basically have anything you wanted. And then my mother was so, like, she wanted all of her children to get a college education. That was her thing. And she wanted us to have the best kind of life we could have. So she was my number one cheerleader. She just felt like I could do anything. And that's how she made me feel. And I know she did this with I'm talking for myself, but my other sisters and my brothers will tell you the same thing.
Right.
My mother, my parents were wonderful. I'm so happy to have them.
Well, that's great.
But she did so many things that were of service, what I call of service to others, that's why I do what I do. That's why I volunteered in so many different ways over the years. No matter what I was doing for a living, I was always volunteering because I got that from her.
Right.
Watching her give back. You have to. If you have gifts, if you have anything, if you have skills, you have to share it with others. It doesn't mean anything if you keep it to yourself.
Right.
So I love children, so I work with children. I work with the children every Sunday in my church, Christian Tabernacle Baptist Church. I've worked with children over the years. I was a big sister for 2 years to two different girls that came from broken homes. I've done a lot of things with children, but just working. Oh, the New Haven Public Schools. I was a community volunteer for them.
Okay.
The New Haven Reads Aloud. I can't even think of the name of it now because it's been so long. But I did that for like 6 years. I just anything, children, books, things like that.
That's great.
Love doing.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in. You know, I've been meaning to do this. You know, we've been talking about this. You know, and, you know, you've inspired the community. You've inspired me, you know, you know, we wish you all the luck.
Thank you so much.
And keep making that money over at Channel 8.
Thank you, Juan.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Juan Castillo with you. This has been the Electric Drum. We will see you next week.